Okay. So tonight we'll have the overview in preparation for the exam. The exam is next Tuesday at 7 o'clock in this theatre. So your open book topics are due next Tuesday also, and your oral presentation should be completed by next Tuesday. So we'll begin with chapter 70, and we'll go to chapter 80. So it's 11 chapters that we're covering. This is the longest section we've ever done for an exam because we're speeding things up a bit. So it's a very long section. So we'll go through, and if you have any questions as you go or any points you'd like to add, then please add them as we go. So everyone needs to get settled, everyone needs to concentrate. And then we can begin. Is everyone ready? That's where the mic is. Okay. So what is chapter 70 called? Oh, Krishna's daily activities. So one of the main things to understand from this chapter is that Krishna is living in Dwaraka. When Krishna is living in Vrindavan, his pastimes are simply for his pleasure. Brinda, you have to sit down somewhere. His pastimes are simply for his pleasure, for no other purpose. When he goes to Dwaraka, his pastimes are for the example of others. In other words, he sets the perfect example of Dharma in order to inspire and to set the example for all of his followers. So you'll see in the morning, it's described that he wakes up early in the morning. That's his lila within Dwaraka. And it says that the first thing he does is that he will touch water, which means he'll take a bath of sorts. When he's in Vrindavan, he takes bath in the morning. It's not a complete bath, but he'll take like a partial bath. Prabhupada used to do that also. Prabhupada would get up early, like 12:30. It wouldn't take a full bath, it'd take like a partial bath. And then he would begin his translation, and then later on he would take his full bath. Krishna was also doing like that in Vrindavan. In Dwarka, so he gets up, he takes some sort of bath in the morning. Some sort of purification, which is there. And then it says that he begins to meditate, clears his mind. The Brahma Muhurta hour is the time for meditation. 1.5 hours before the sun rises. That is the ideal time. So Krishna shows us, if you want to make advancement in spiritual life, you have to wake up early. If you wake up late, it'll be very difficult to advance. So you have to get up very early in the morning. Now, Prabhupada was getting up very early. That's the program. That's the system. So then Krishna begins to meditate. What does he meditate on? He meditates on himself. That's not actually true. It's not precise. What does Krishna actually meditate on? Yeah, he meditates on Vrindavan. When he's in Dwarka, he's simply meditating on Vrindavan. Wherever Krishna is, he meditates on Vrindavan. His eternal relationship with his Nitya Parishads, which means his eternal associates. So Krishna, in the morning, he gets up and he goes into meditation. And then describes after that, then he gives charity. This should also be our system. In the Vedic time, the chaturu would give charity every morning. That's not the system we do now. Yeah, we probably give a donation every week or something to the temple, but the basic principle is that you have to give some charity. And then It said he would dress auspiciously. This is also part of the Vedic culture, to dress auspiciously. Wear dhoti, wear sari, wear auspicious clothes like that. The clothes that we're wearing these days are less and less auspicious. But in the Vedic time, then Krishna would dress in a very auspicious way. Because he wanted to focus on the goal of life. When you dress in devotional cloth, then your consciousness goes to the goal of life. When you dress in your jeans and all these other things, you don't have the same consciousness. Your consciousness is not fixed. So Krishna is showing us how, especially when you go into the temple to see the deity, then you should wear devotional cloth as much as possible. That's the system. So then it describes after he woke up and performed his ablutions, performed his morning duties, then he would go to work. So same as all of us. Prabhupada says that we have the ISKCON sandwich. So it means in the morning you do spiritual activities, in the daytime you do your duty, in the nighttime you do your spiritual activities. That's the system. So what did Krishna do for work? Or is it Dwarka? What is it?
Rule the kingdom.
Rule the kingdom, yeah. So what would he do? He would get on the chariot, and then where would he go?
Sudama Assembly Hall.
Yeah, the Sudama Assembly Hall. That was his office. So he would head to the office. 16,108 Krishnas would travel to Sudama Assembly Hall. And as they all traveled, they would begin to merge like that. So that, but by the time they came to the actual assembly hall, it was just one chariot and one Krishna. He can't walk in, 16,000 Krishnas can't walk in. Just one Krishna walks in. And then at the end of the day, when he leaves, he goes out, one Krishna goes out, gets on one chariot, but as it begins to travel into Dwarka, it manifests into 16,108. This is Achincha Shakti, inconceivable potency. You cannot do it. None of us can do it. It's not possible. But Krishna can do it. Yes. Who drives the chariot? Krishna cannot drive. The eternal associates can also expand. According to Yogamaya's desire, Lila Shakti, they can also expand for those pastimes. So as much as necessary then.
So somebody with maximum 8, they can expand into 8, but they want more than that or something.
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know technically. But one would imagine that 16,108 Dwarkas would go. That's what I would imagine. Unless the only other, I haven't heard the specifics, the only other explanation is that Dwarka would be at Rukmini's palace, which is the principal palace. And then as they drive, they all merge, and then the other drivers would somehow merge or something like that. But I would imagine it would be Dwarka. That's what I would imagine. So yeah, I'm not sure. I thought the same thing when I read about it. So, the Sudama Assembly House was a gift from? No, it wasn't a gift from Indra. They stole it. They had to steal it from Indra. Who was it a gift from? Who gave it to Krishna? His relatives. Remember, they all went to heaven and they took it. All the Yadavs went to Swaga and they said, "We're taking the assembly house back to Dwarka." And Indra said, "No, you are not." So they said, "Okay, then we will fight." And then they defeated Indra and the demigods and they took it. Okay. So it was a gift from Krishna's family. Just like if your family really likes you, maybe they'll buy you a house or something. Oh, okay. Doesn't happen so much now in Kali Yuga, but yeah. But then in Krishna's time, they get the whole Sudama assembly. So Krishna would go. And it says that as long as you're in there, Sudama assembly hall, there's no thirst, there's no hunger, there's no old age, there's no death, there's no disease. No. There's no inauspiciousness in the assembly hall. So where is that assembly hall now? No, but where is it right now? We don't know where it is. Yeah. The actual hall would be somewhere else. Yeah, it would have gone maybe back to heaven or like that. But it was a very special place. So then, how does Krishna start the day in the office?
Entertainment.
Just like when you go to your office in the morning. There's some entertainment. Some dancers come, some singers come, some actors come. Now, can you imagine in your office if those things took place? No? You cannot even think of it. It is not possible.
Actors are
there. Actors are there? Some drama?
Or the
Firefighting.
Yeah. But previously, but it's actually, it's a superior culture because you get to the office, the first half an hour, it's just, everyone just has entertainment. You know, some dancers, some singers, some actors, some magicians, some jugglers, you know, all those things. I mean, you would feel much better about your work. This is actually the system. You know, it's a very artificial system we have now. That you just go to work and you have to get straight into it. And even before you get to work, you're working. You know, when you're leaving the office, you're still on the phone doing things. And it's a very unhealthy system. So Krishna's showing us the way it should be. So then, the brahmanas, they begin to chant their mantras to purify the atmosphere. And you'll see all through this section, one of the main points of this section of the Bhagavatam, because it is Krishna's Dwaraka pastimes, one of the main points that we see from the entire section is that it is a display of Vedic culture. Right? We learn a lot of cultural points. A lot of details are given of how life was and should be. How did people dress? How did they decorate the city? What was the architecture like? What sort of foods did they eat? How did they treat guests? How did they dress? All these details are given, right? Because they're showing us the superior culture. This is the way that life should be. Now it's artificial the way it is. It's under the influence of the Kali Yuga. So the brahmanas would chant mantras in the morning in the brahmanas to purify the atmosphere. That's the purpose of brahmanas. Now, brahmanas purify the atmosphere. That's the culture. We need that within ISKCON. Now, that's why Prabhupada said the temple should be an educational center. This is Prabhupada's desire. I read a quote the other day, actually, by Prabhupada. He said about worshipping the deity. I'm just trying to think what he said. It was something along the lines, if you're just doing deity worship, but there's no preaching, Prabhupada says something like, the whole thing will become rubbish. Very strong statement Prabhupada makes. But he says that. If you know, you come to the temple, it's only deity worship, but there's no prachar, there's no preaching, you know, no classes and education and these things, Prabhupada said it would become rubbish. The whole institution. It wasn't Prabhupada's idea. This is Prabhupada's idea. You know, that we come together, we discuss about Krishna, we have classes regularly, morning, evening. This is Prabhupada's vision. That's what the temple is for. And then it becomes very auspicious. The right atmosphere is there. Okay. So then, the second half of the chapter goes into the discussion about Jarasandha. Because Krishna's gone to the office, so now they have to begin to speak about the problems in the kingdom. And what is one of the main problems?
The imprisoned king's messenger.
Yeah. the messenger comes from the. On behalf of the, how many kings were there?
20,000.
20,000 and 800. Bhagavad Gita says 20,800. Make sure you get this right in your exam. Otherwise you will lose marks. I don't want 19,000. I don't even want 21,600. 20,000? Thank you. So 20,800, they sent the messenger, and the messenger delivered the letter. Please save us from Jarasandha. So what did the Yadus, what did they want to do?
Go and fight the messenger.
Yeah, they said, let's just go. Because they're young. Krishna's a bit older by this point. How long was Krishna on earth for? 125 years. How long was he in Vrindavan? How long?
11.
Yeah, between 10 and 11 years he was in Vrindavan. How long was he in Mathura?
8 years.
How long? Mathura?
12 or
13. No, 18. Why 18 years? Jarasandha attacked how many times?
17.
Yeah. Jarasandha attacked 17 times. Then the 18th time, Krishna said, okay, that's it. Let's go to Dwarka. He moved the whole thing to Dwarka.
He attacked only once a year.
Yeah, once a year. Prabhupada said, because it took him a year to get the army together. You know, and then he came back and he attacked another time. So Krishna lived in Mathura for 18 years, and then the rest of the time was Dwarka. So that means how long would that have been? It would have been 97 years, roughly. 97 years. He would have been in Dwarka. So by this point, Krishna's senior now. Yeah, he's Navayovana, which means he doesn't age. He always looks young. Prabhupada said in Dwarka he doesn't look older than 25. So he always looks like a young person. But he's quite older now. You know, he's probably like maybe at this point 80, maybe 90, so I don't know, maybe more senior now. So at this point in time, the other members are young. His sons, his grandsons, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. So they just want to attack. When you're young, you just want to get the job done. When you're older, you're like, come on, let's just relax. You know. But when you're young, just... So Pradyumna and everyone, they said, let's just go over to Jarasandha. Let's just get the army, we'll just go over there, and we'll kill him and then come back. But Krishna says, no, let's do it more expertly. There must be another way to deal with him. So they're discussing about Jarasandha, how to deal with it, how to save the kings. So the Bhagavad Gita points out that the kings were suffering. And generally we see, at least for myself and I think most devotees, why do we come to Krishna consciousness?
Distress.
Yeah, because we're in distress, we're suffering. For myself, that's why I came to this temple. I still remember very clearly the day I walked into the temple 30 years ago. Right, I was distressed, that's why I came. I didn't come because I was seeking spiritual enlightenment. I mean, that was there, but the impetus was distress. So the kings, they want, because of distress, they're surrendering to Krishna. This is not the highest level or the highest reason to surrender to Krishna, but still it is a good reason. Akama, savakamo, va mokshakamo, dharati. Krishna says, regardless of why you come, at least come to Krishna to solve your problems. So they're suffering, they go to Krishna, and then Krishna makes an arrangement to liberate them. So then, it is pointed out that sometimes when we want the help of Krishna, we have to wait. It may not come automatically or quickly. Krishna may not deliver us straight away. So you can pray to Krishna, but if you pray to Krishna, you have to be willing to wait, because maybe Krishna's plan will take some time. So then don't think that we can just pray and then Krishna will organize everything straight away. It's up to Krishna when he wants to do it. Yeah. So they're praying that they want, but they have to wait some time. Yeah. Krishna, it'll take some time for Krishna to get there with Bhimasen. So, they begin to discuss, and then they discuss that the Rajasuya sacrifice needs to be performed, and the discussion goes towards Yudhishthira. Why is it that he wants to do the sacrifice? What's the point of doing the Rajasuya sacrifice? What is it? Yeah, that's it. Specifically, it mentions he wants to get Krishna's association. That's his main reason for doing the sacrifice. And he wants to please Krishna. He wants to give Krishna pleasure. And that's how a pure devotee thinks. Right? The reason we do our service should be to give Krishna pleasure. And Guru, Krishna, Vaishnavas, Hari Guru Vaishnava Bhagavata Gita. You know what Bhagavad Gita says? We should do our service to please Krishna, the Vaishnavas, right, and the Guru. That should be our motivation. That's why we do the service. And then, ultimately, our ultimate goal is to get Krishna's association. That desire should come in your heart. Hands up if you want Krishna's association. That's good. Some devotees do. That's good. So, how will you get Krishna's association? That's the process. No? But what's the qualification? Yeah, but Rupa Goswami says lopa. Lopa means?
Greed.
Yeah, greed. You have to want it. Yeah, tatraloyam. Eka means there's only one qualification to get Krishna's association. You have to be greedy. If there's not greed, you will not get Krishna's association. You can try for lifetimes, you will not get it. The problem is we don't want Krishna's association. We don't have any attachment or feeling. So if you don't have attachment or feeling, then how will you get Krishna's association? So Yudhishthira, he wanted Krishna's association. He wanted to please Krishna. So then, and also from the tattva point of view, to establish Krishna's supremacy. Because the Rajasuya sacrifice teaches us, the pastime teaches us one thing, that Krishna is the supreme entity of all the living entities. So then what does Krishna do? Who does he ask for his opinion? Uddhava. What does Uddhava mean? No, it doesn't mean expert. Uddhava, what does it mean? Means like someone who is very festive. Uddhava. Means like someone who is like a walking festival. Uddhava is a very special personality. He's Krishna's closest friend in Dwarka, his cousin. So he asks Uddhava, and Uddhava is so connected to Krishna, he understands Krishna's desire. That should be the way that we become with Krishna. We should be like that with our guru. We should understand the guru's heart, his desire. We should understand the other devotees. What are their desires? Just like Rasik, he brought the water for class. And I was just touching then. What's the temperature? Guy's crazy. What's the temperature of the water? What's the temperature? No, it's warm. That's warm. I don't drink cold water, right? If you that's service. Service means you have to understand what is the desire of the person. I don't drink cold water, not in this kind of temperature. Right? So he's good. It's like the water's warm. Right? So Uddhava, he understands Krishna's heart, his mind, his desires. Right? So then he understands, how does Krishna want to kill Jarasandha? Right? He understands the Yadus, they just want to go there and kill. Krishna does not want to do that. So he understands everything and he makes a perfect arrangement. So that takes us to chapter 71. What is chapter 71 called? The Lord travels to Indraprastha. Very good. So then, Uddhava gives the advice. He says that we cannot go with a large army, because then we'll have to fight Jarasandha's entire army, and their army is extremely formidable. Not the Yadavs would win anyway, but he's just saying like that. So then he says, better that we just invite him for a single combat. We just challenge him directly. And he understands Krishna's desire is that Bhimasen fight with him. So he says there's only one person who can fight with him, that is Bhima. And we have to go in disguise. So we have to dress as Brahmanas. So Krishna, Arjun, and Bhimasen, they dress as Brahmanas. So then Krishna, he goes to Indraprastha, travels across. He gets to Indraprastha, and it describes that when they are planning to go to Indraprastha, they make a huge caravan. And it sounds very wonderful. I was reading it again today. I read it a few months ago when we discussed it. It's a very beautiful description. So much these days in our lives, we are not enjoying like the process of getting somewhere. It's like everyone's just thinking about the destination. But there is as much pleasure in traveling to the place. So they travel in a very beautiful way, very opulent, right? Very satisfied, very colorful, right? Everyone's going, they're having so much enjoyment and pleasure. Krishna doesn't just enjoy when he gets to a place, but the whole process is enjoyable. So they travel to Indraprastha in this huge caravan, in this huge assembly, and they get to Indraprastha. When they arrive in Indraprastha, then they are greeted by Yudhishthira, and all of the Kauravas. Now, the Bhagavatam once again teaches us about etiquette, because Yudhishthira is a few years older than Krishna, Bhima and Arjuna are about the same age, and Nakula and Sahadeva are younger. So everyone treats Krishna differently. Bhima and Arjuna embrace Krishna. Krishna bows at the feet of Yudhishthira. And Nakula and Sahadeva bow at Krishna's feet. This is a Vaishnav Sadacha. So we have to learn this, how to deal with different devotees accordingly. So Bhagavatam is teaching us these subtle etiquettes. So then, Queen Kunti, let's describe Kunti, Draupadi, everyone meets with Krishna, but Kunti is very spontaneous with Krishna, as they all are. This is called Ragatmika Bhakti. Raga means spontaneity. This is what the Bhagavatam is teaching us, how to spontaneously love and serve Krishna. So these devotees have this Ragatmika Bhakti, so then they show Krishna this kind of reciprocation. Yeah. And then Kunti, she instructs Draupadi to serve the queens. How many queens are there? 16,107. Sorry, 8. 16,108 queens. So then Draupadi, she begins to serve all of the queens. Even though she technically, she is the empress of the earth. But the nature of a devotee is that even if they're in a superior position, they will always take the humble position. Just like a number of years ago, I was staying in, what is that hospital they've got in Mumbai? Just leave them outside, Prabhu. That's okay. Just leave them outside. It's okay. The Bhaktivedanta Hospital, where is it? Mira Road? Yeah. So I was staying there. I had one room. I was getting some Panchakarma treatment. And then Radhishyam Prabhu came. The senior disciple of Radhanaswami. A very qualified person, materially and spiritually, very qualified. And, you know, he's like the temple president of the Pune temple. He's like very, you know, qualified person. And we had to share a room for a couple of nights. I was in the room and they sent him. They said, he can stay with you for a few nights. As soon as he walked in, he offered obeisances. Right? So he's such a cultured person. Right? Has so much material responsibility, spiritual responsibility. Such a qualified person. But so humble in his demeanor and his disposition. So that is the qualification of a devotee. Just like Draupadi. As soon as the queens came, even though technically she's the empress, so she's superior in one sense, but she always thinks, no, these are devotees. Let me serve the devotees. And they're Krishna's associates. So, yeah. So thinking that, then she begins to serve them all and look after them all. And that's the etiquette of the devotee. Okay, so then chapter 72 is called?
The slaying of demon Jarasandha.
The slaying of the demon Jarasandha. Jarasandha Maharaj ki. Okay, no one's happy? Alright. The sacrifice, why was the sacrifice being performed? Why was the Rajasuri sacrifice being performed? Yeah. To establish Krishna as the Supreme Person. Right? So in other words, it was a preaching endeavor. Yeah? Why do we do anything that we do? Preaching. Why do we organize all these programs that we do? Like on Sunday night, they had the Madhavas, the rock band. Right? Why do we do that? That's preaching. Right? We organize these jagyas, these sacrifices. Why? Because to spread Krishna's glories. So that is why we did it. That's why we do all the different programs that we do. So 5,000 years ago, Yudhishthira organized the Rajasuri sacrifice. It was a preaching endeavor to bring everyone together to understand the Supreme Absolute Truth. Param Satyam Nimihi. That Krishna is the Supreme Entity. So then, he performed such an opulent endeavor. The only way that they could do the Rajasuri sacrifice, they had to kill Jarasandha. Otherwise, they could not do the sacrifice. Because the only way you could do the sacrifice is if every king on the earth admits or accepts subordination to the emperor. That's the only way the sacrifice can be done. And Jarasandha was never going to submit to Yudhishthira. Right? So they had to kill him. That was the only way to deal with it. So Krishna, he blessed Bhimasen that he would be able to perform this difficult task. So when they went to Jarasandha, they were disguised as brahmanas. And then what did Jarasandha do? Yeah, he thought to himself, the Bhagavad Gita mentions, I think they are Kshatriyas, but they are coming to me as Brahmanas and they are begging, I will give them whatever they ask for. Even if they ask for my life, I will give them that. We can't even imagine what this is like, right? This level of culture. And this is a demon we're talking about. We're not even talking about a devotee, right? Even the demons are so cultured. We don't even understand what all this means. I mean, really, we don't understand this level of culture. You know, that a demon, someone comes and says, you take whatever you want. Even if you take my life, I will give it to you. So, they beg from him the charity of a fight, and he says, I will fight Bhimasen. He says, Krishna is a coward, and Arjuna is weak. So I will fight with Bhimasen. He is a good match. So then he hands Bhima a club, and he takes another club. He actually hands him the larger club. That's how cultured they are. You know, just like, these days we play some cricket or we play some, tennis or soccer or something. And, people like to cheat. They do. They like to cheat. Even when we play sometimes, devotees like to cheat. And then even like on the world scene, like, the Australian team last year, they were cheating. They're messing with the ball. They had one guy had sandpaper in his pocket. Take the cricket ball, he was rubbing the sandpaper to affect the ball. And they caught him on camera, and then they got fined and everything. This is not chivalry. Jarasandha, I mean, he's a demon, but he gives Bhima the larger club. So you take the bigger one. If you win, you win with the big one. I don't want anyone saying I won because I had the bigger club. That's chivalry. And then they go out and they fight each other. And the fight goes for like 28 days. And every night when the fight is finished, what do they do?
Sit.
Yeah, they have dinner together. Imagine all day you're trying to kill someone. And then another time you say, now come and take prasad. Right? And then they talk while they're taking prasad. Oh, that was really quite brilliant the way you struck me with that club. Yeah, where did you learn that move? That's how they're talking over dinner. Right? Take prasad again. And then Jarasandha, when they finish dinner, he'd say, now go and take rest. So you'd organize beautiful beds for them and everything. Go and take rest. Rest yourself properly. What do you need? Just tell me whatever you need, I'll give it to you. Right? And then the next morning, they just grab clubs, they go and they try to kill each other again. It's a different culture. I don't think any of us can really understand these kind of things. It's like another level of culture. But this is the way it was in the Vedic times. So, during the fight, it's going for so long that it looks like no one will win. But then Krishna finally gives the indication how to kill him. He takes the stick and then he bifurcates it, and then Bhima understands and he bifurcates, breaks in half, Jarasandha, kills him. And then they install his son as the king. His son is obviously a pious person. Otherwise Krishna would not have installed him, but he made him the king. Okay, what is the next chapter called? Lord Krishna blesses the liberated kings. So when they see Krishna, they embrace Krishna with their eyes. That is the potency of bhakti. When you see the deity, then in your eyes you can embrace the deity, or you can fall at the deity's feet, or you can do so much with your eyes or your consciousness, your mind. And it says, as soon as they saw Krishna, all of their sins became completely eradicated. And then they were able to fully surrender to Krishna. And the point is made that unless you suffer, then you cannot become humble. Now, most of us are not very humble. Hands up if you are humble. Okay, it's not very good. Because we're all supposed to be humble. So the only way that we can become humble, we have to go through suffering. When you are suffering, then you become humble. Without suffering, you cannot become humble. This is the system. Krishna has to break your false ego. How will he do that? So many ways. He might take away your health, might take away your family members, or he might send your family members. There's so many ways that he can break your pride. So there's different ways that he will do it in order to purify the consciousness. But the point is, unless you become humble, you go through suffering, then you cannot develop the right consciousness to surrender to Krishna. So we have to go. Actually, many years ago, the last time my Guru Maharaj came to Australia, 2001, and then we went to Sydney, and then Indradumna Swami was there. So then Tamakrish Maharaj was giving class, and then Indradumna Swami, he asked at the end of the class, he said, Maharaj, he says, is it possible to fully surrender or to develop love for Krishna without suffering? And Tamakrish Maharaj said, no, it is not. You have to go through suffering. Every devotee will have to go through suffering, because that will make us actually qualified. It will give us the humility to surrender to Krishna. So the kings, they went through that. They became fully surrendered to Krishna. And then Krishna released them and sent them back to their various kingdoms. And they ruled on behalf of Krishna. So then the let me see. Yeah, that's basically the gist of the chapter. What is the next chapter called?
The deliverance of Shishupal.
Yeah, the deliverance of Shishupal and the Rajasuya sacrifice. So, Krishna comes back to Indraprastha, and then Yudhishthira greets him. And Krishna is playing the part, it describes in the Bhagavatam, like a dramatic actor. He does all these pastimes just to satisfy his devotees. Krishna gets great satisfaction and bliss by satisfying his devotees. So he has arranged all of this just so Yudhishthira can perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. Krishna likes to serve his devotees. So what did he do? He assisted Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira needed Jarasandha gone, so Krishna made the arrangement. So that is the satisfaction that Yudhishthira is feeling, that Krishna has reciprocated with him in such an intimate way. He's even served Yudhishthira. So then, then the Rajasuya sacrifice, the arrangements are begun. And so many exalted personalities come from all around the universe. We need to meditate actually on the significance of this particular pastime. It was so powerful, and Yudhishthira himself was so powerful that he attracted the entire universe. Just like at Easter time, we had the Kirtan Mela. So Indradumna Swami came, Bibi Govindamaras came, Badahari Prabhu, Shri Prahlad Prabhu, like, you know, and so many devotees went. Right? It's like whenever there was a great sacrifice, a great man, then devotees come from everywhere. Like that, you know, Mayapur Festival, the Maha Abhishek. You know, in 2022 or so, the TOVP will open, and devotees will come from so many directions for these great functions. Yeah. So it is said here that they came from the entire universe, the most exalted personalities. The demigods themselves came. Lord Brahma came. Lord Shiva was there. Even Lord Vishnu was there. The most powerful personalities. So, by worshipping Lord Krishna, everything became very auspicious. But unfortunately, not everyone was satisfied when Sahadev recommended that Krishna was the most exalted person in the assembly. Sahadev recommended many of the great sages. They also agreed. Krishna was made the most respected person in the sacrifice. He was worshipped especially. And then Shishupal became very upset. He protested. The devotees wanted to kill him. And then finally Krishna had enough. And he stood up, invoked the Sudarshana Chakra, killed him, but in such a way that no blood fell on the sacrificial arena. Nothing was contaminated, and the sacrifice was still considered pure. So everything was kept intact. And then Shishupal merged into the Brahmajyoti, into Krishna's effulgence. Actually, it said that he shot to Vaikuntha first and then came back down. It said like a lightning bolt when Winged Krishna was merged into him. So then, everyone was satisfied. The Rajasuri sacrifice was finished. Yudhishthira was considered successful. Krishna had been worshipped, so Yudhishthira was satisfied. And then, only one person it mentions in particular was not happy. Duryodhana. So then the next chapter is? Duryodhana is? Humiliated. Yeah. Duryodhana is humiliated. So why is he upset? Yeah, it said he was particularly attracted to Draupadi, right? And he was envious because Draupadi was the wife of the Pandavas. So when you're envious, you will suffer, right? You have to give up envy, because as long as you're envious of other devotees, then you will suffer. You'll never be happy. Envious people are not happy. So then, they performed the Abhavrita bath after they did the Rajasuri sacrifice. And it is said that the husbands and wives that were throwing makhan, yogurt, dahi on each other, having big yogurt fights. It's good fun. Good fun. Like sometimes you throw prasad at each other. Maybe you have not done that, but they're very good fun. I mean, years ago we had big gulab competition, big fight. We all start throwing gulabs at each other. Very wild. Not very common, but we were doing it. So they're very blissful. Everyone was very happy. And then it describes that the men and women, their associates, Yudhishthira and his wives and the Pandavas, they were free from sex desire. So all the relationship between the husband and wives. It was on the spiritual platform. But Duryodhan was not satisfied. So then he walked into Maharaj Yudhishthira's courtroom after everything was finished. It said that he was so angry, he was carrying a sword. So he walks in with a sword, all of his brothers, speaks very roughly to the guards. And then as he's walking in, Mayadhanava had made, or sorry, Vishwakarma had made the floor. Some parts were water, some parts were land. And if you were envious of Yudhishthira, you would see it opposite. So then he fell into the water and everyone laughed. And Bhimasena especially laughed. Yudhishthira tried to stop everyone, but Krishna with his eyes, Krishna said, oh, keep going, laugh. He encouraged everyone because Krishna had a desire. He wanted to see Duryodhan finished as well. So he also made, actually this is what began the battle of Kurukshetra, when Duryodhan was insulted at this point. And when he left, Yudhishthira actually said to everyone, he said, this will cause trouble. And that was the beginning of the lead into the battle. Now, so at this point, Krishna allowed this to take place because Krishna wanted to destroy the burden of the earth. So then the next chapter is called? Yeah, so Shalva then attacks Dwarika. So how did Shalva become powerful? He worshipped Lord Shiva, as many of the demons do, and he became very powerful. So after worshipping Lord Shiva and becoming very powerful, then he attacked Dwarka. So when he attacked Dwarka, it was so ferocious that many of the Dwarka Basis were terrified. You know, many of the queens and everything. So they were taken into the inner parts of the palaces in order to be protected. But then Pradyumna and the others, they attacked Shalva. And there was a great fight which took place. So the fight was going on. It was very powerful and it was taking a long time. And it was said that the fight was so powerful that even Pradyumna became knocked out when he was fighting Juman. Juman is the general of Shalva's army. So Pradyumna was knocked out. And then Krishna's chariot driver, Daruka, his son, who was driving Pradyumna, he took Pradyumna from the battlefield. And when he came back to consciousness, he chastised him. He said, what have you done? Right? And then they turned around and they went back and they attacked and he killed Juman. So at that point in time, it says, chapter 77 begins. What is chapter 77?
Lord Krishna slays the demon Shalva.
Krishna?
Slays the demon Shalva.
Yeah, slays the demon Shalva. So then Krishna, he sees there are inauspicious omens, so he understands Dwarka must be under attack. So he immediately goes back to Dwarka. And when he arrives back in Dwarka, then he immediately begins to fight with Shalva. So, it said the battle went on for a long, long time. And while Krishna and Shalva were fighting, Shalva hit Krishna's left arm and he dropped his Shanga bow. So once again, this is like Hiranyakashipu playing with, Nrisingadev playing with Hiranyakashipu. Sometimes it looks like the demon has the upper hand, but actually he's just being destroyed by the Lord. So they fought for a long time, then finally Krishna destroys him, invokes Sudarshana, and destroys the aerial mansion as well, right? And kills Shalva. And then, actually before that takes place, in the battle, then Shalva brings, by the arrangement of his mystical power, he brings a false Vasudev, Krishna's father, and then he decapitates cuts the head off Krishna's father. And by the arrangement of Yogamaya, Krishna feels that his father has been killed for a moment. So he is allowed to feel that emotion. Like that. But then he realizes, actually, no, it's just an illusion, and he destroys him. So then you have chapter 78. What is chapter 78? Yeah. So the killing of Dantavakra. Who was that one? Vidurat.
Vidurat
and Romaharshana as well. So Dantavakra, he is the other gatekeeper from Vaikuntha. Jai and Vijay fell. First they became Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, then Ravana, Kumbhakarna, then Shishupal and Dantavakra. So Krishna goes directly from Dwarka to Mathura in one moment, the speed of mind, and then he fights with Dantavakra. Why does he destroy Dantavakra? His actual desire is he wants to go back to Vrindavan, because he has not been there for a long time. And it describes, there's not much in the Bhagavatam, but the Acharyas describe, after he kills Dantavakra, he finally goes back to Braj, to Vrindavan. And when he's in Vrindavan, he spends 2 months having pastimes with his eternal associate. It says that he actually marries Srimati Radharani and the gopis. And at the end of the pastime, after 2 months, he takes them all back to the spiritual world. And the Vrindavan pastimes are wound up. Then Krishna heads back to Dwarka and he stays in Dwarka for the remaining part of his pastimes. So, while all this is taking place, Lord Balaram goes on pilgrimage. Because Lord Balaram doesn't want to take part in the war which is going to take place between the Pandavas and the Kauravas. So Balaram travels around. He meets Romaharshan Sutta, the sages of Naimisharanya. And Romaharshan is proud, falsely proud. So he does not offer proper respect, even though he's so learned. So the point is made that if you are very learned but you're not humble, then there's no fruit to your learning. What's the point of being so learned but you don't have humility? So he is such a learned person, but he lacks humility. So therefore, Lord Balaram kills him. But then all the sages say, what have you done? You just killed the speaker of the Bhagavatam, or the head of the sacrifice. So then Balaram says, don't worry, I will install his son, who represents the father. And then the sages say, you have done that, but still there is a fault here. You have to purify yourself, go on pilgrimage. So then he goes on pilgrimage all around India. Finally, he heads back when he is finished. And then he meets Bhima and Duryodhana, who after the battle of Kurukshetra, they're having a duel. And he says, do not fight, just be friends. It's too far now. So then that's Krishna's arrangement. He leaves, he goes back to Naimisharanya. And then Bhima kills Duryodhana. What is the next chapter?
Chapter 8? 79. That
Lord Balaram goes to pilgrimage. Yeah, Lord Balaram keeps doing pilgrimage. So he travels back to Naimisharanya, and the sage is asking for Dakshina. So then he says, what do you want? They say, kill this demon Balbal, who is causing problems. He is defiling the sacrificial arena. So Balaram kills Balval. And then he keeps going around the holy places. And then finally we have chapter 80. What is chapter 80 called?
The Brahman Sudama visits Lord Krishna in Dwarka.
Yeah, this is a very beautiful chapter. Like, we've only done half the chapter so far, but the basic gist of the chapter is that Sudama is asked by his wife to go to Dwarka. Now this shows perfect Grihastha relationships. What is a perfect Grihastha relationship?
Mutual cooperation,
mutual respect, selflessness. The wife, she just wants food. She says, please go and visit your childhood friend Krishna to get some food so that we can eat, because the wife is worried that her husband Sudama is suffering from hunger, even though she is also suffering from hunger. But that's the way a real Vedic wife thinks. She just wants the husband to be looked after. And he is also thinking like that. He is so selfless, he does not want to ask anything from Krishna. So he says, if I'm going to visit Krishna, let me bring a gift. And he takes four handfuls of chick rice, flat rice. So he goes to visit Krishna. And then we'll hear next Monday, the second half of the chapter, how Krishna takes a little bit of the chip rice and the reciprocation. Any points? Okay. So it's a large section. Okay. A lot of it is Leela. So next Monday we'll finish chapter 80, and then on the Tuesday we'll have the exam here in the theatre. And your open book topics are due and your oral presentations. And please keep up with your fees as well. Some people are dropping behind, so keep that all up together. Srila Prabhupada ki. See you next Tuesday, ki.